Hey everybody, Ricky Medlock here from Lynyrd Skynyrd to Blackfoot to the Ricky Medlock Band, all the way through. You're listening to the best Thunder Underground.
Welcome to episode 394 of the Thunder Underground podcast. Trent here as always. And this week, man, is this a good one. Ricky Medlock is in the house for this podcast. Very, very cool. Very happy to be able to say that. Ricky Medlock, of course, is a member of Lynyrd Skynyrd. He is an original member of Lynyrd Skynyrd. And then he formed Blackfoot. And then he returned to Lynyrd Skynyrd in the mid-90s, and he's been there ever since. So guess what? We're going to talk about Lynyrd Skynyrd at the beginning. We're going to talk about Lynyrd Skynyrd now. We're going to talk about his return to Lynyrd Skynyrd. We're going to talk about Blackfoot. We're going to talk about the Ricky Medlock Band. And we're going to talk about some other stuff. This is a great one. And I'm very happy to jump into this one very soon. But before we do, I need to let you know who sponsors this podcast. That would be DEB Concerts, a promoter based right here in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. They've brought many, many great acts to the Tulsa area, and they're not slowing down anytime soon. Coming up later this month, April 24th, Faster Pussycat is returning to Tulsa. They're playing the Venue Shrine. They will be joined by good friends of this podcast, Dime Store Riot. You don't want to miss this show. It'll be excellent. Shows at the Venue Shrine always are. DEBconcerts.com for more information. Of course, hit up the Venue Shrine as well to find out about ticket purchase. Follow DEB Concerts on all their socials. Facebook, Instagram, and X are all at DEB Concerts. They also book the Roadhouse stage at Rocklahoma every year. This year is no different. And guess what? The Rocklahoma lineup is probably out by the time you're hearing this. The lineup's dropping on Tuesday, April 2nd at noon Central. And I believe Tuesday, April 2nd is when this podcast is coming out. So next time I talk to you, maybe we'll have some info on that. But until then, hit up DEB Concerts on all the socials and be sure to let them know you found out about them right here on Thunder Underground if for some reason you didn't know. We've also got Sunset Tattoo, a tattoo shop located in Midtown Tulsa. They are native owned and their tattoos are done good and proper. They've got three artists on staff, one of which being a female artist. You can call, text, message, whatever you need to do to set up an appointment to talk about what work you're looking to have done. They also accept walk-ins. All their previous work is viewable on their socials. Instagram and Facebook are both Sunset Tattoo Tulsa. You can check out all their work there. Great stuff. I've had work done more than once by Jake, and I'm very happy with it. And I know you will be too. So hit up Sunset Tattoo and let them know you heard about them right here on Thunder Underground. All right. So just jumping into the subject at hand, which would be Ricky Medlock. Ricky has a brand new single out called Never Run Out of Road that came out in January with the Ricky Medlock Band. Proceeds from this single are going to the MMIW, which is the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Woman campaign. Ricky is going to fill you in on all that here shortly when I start talking to him. Lots of great info from him when it comes to the charities that are involved with this, why he chose to be a part of this, and of course, the great song and everything that goes along with that. So check out Never Run Out of Road if you have not heard it yet. Great song, as you would expect from Ricky, in that southern rock style that he's known for from his time with Blackfoot and, of course, his time with Lynyrd Skynyrd. Speaking of Blackfoot, you know, a lot of people are familiar with Train Train and Highway Song, but there's so much great stuff from that band that has always kind of been a highly underrated band. In not just the southern rock world, but the hard rock world and rock and roll in general, you know, because they kind of shifted to a hard rock sound in the 80s. You know, they've got tons of great stuff out there. And, you know, kind of something unique about Blackfoot is, you know, the modern current version of Blackfoot is a whole new band. You know, none of the classic members. Ricky, you know, was a part of putting together a lineup of younger guys to kind of just celebrate and continue on the legacy of Blackfoot for a whole new generation and for an older generation to still enjoy the music live, but also bringing it, you know, the spirit of what Blackfoot was about to everyone. I think that's a cool idea. You know, it's a cool concept. It's not like, You know, there's bands out there that we've talked about that have no original members yet, you know, but just kind of acting like that they are that entity. And while this band of the current members of Blackfoot is that entity, it was put together by basically the man that we all know as being, you know, the ringleader, so to speak, of Blackfoot. So that's what really makes that concept cool. And it's something that, you know, isn't that common. So, and they're already on the second iteration of, you know, a new lineup for Blackfoot over the past, you know, 5-10 years. So check that out as well, if you get a chance. And of course, Ricky has been in Lynyrd Skynyrd now since, you know, he was the original drummer, and he's been back in Lynyrd Skynyrd now since 1996 as one of the three guitarists, as Skynyrd has always had three guitarists. He, of course, replaced Alan Collins in the 90s and has been kind of a mainstay ever since. And he's just a great force of nature when it comes to the live show. Something that we talk about here coming up in the interview is Damon Johnson, who has been the fill-in. You know, he filled in for Gary Rossington whenever Gary, you know, was dealing with his health issues and unable to perform. Damon stepped in. And then, of course, once Gary passed, you know, Damon has remained as one of the three live guitarists in Lynyrd Skynyrd. He's been doing that now for a couple years. Damon Johnson has been on this podcast more than anybody. He's been on here 6 times. You know, I'm a huge fan of everything he's done. And one of the times, I think it was probably the last time he was on, because it's been a couple years ago now since the most recent time. And, you know, he kind of went into detail about how everything came together with Ricky Medlock suggesting him to Gary as, you know, the guy to fill his shoes, you know, so to speak. Gary was definitely on board with it. You know, so it's great to hear that from Damon's side. So you can check out that episode if you have not. And then now you can hear that story from Ricky's side. Ricky talks about it coming up on why he believed Damon was the correct choice and what Damon's kind of brought to the band. But yeah, if you're a Skynyrd fan or, a fan of this style of rock and roll, like I said, 6 times Damon Johnson has been on here in the past. So definitely check those out if you have not. On a live note, you know, I've seen Skynyrd a few times throughout the years. Most recently in 2022, I saw him at a festival here in Oklahoma. I saw him in 2019 at a festival in Tennessee. Before that, it was in the 90s. Every time, you know, Ricky wasn't there the first time I saw him, but he's been there in the recent times, obviously. So glad to have been able to see Ricky live as well. As far as it goes for this interview, it was very fun. It was entertaining. Ricky is a very personable guy, as you could probably hear from, you know, just him in this interview. He's just one of those guys, you know, I sat down with here on Zoom and talked to him for, it was probably a good 45 minutes. You know, it was one of those talks where immediately he starts talking to you and you just feel like you've talked to him before, even though you haven't. Very personable guy. So it just makes what I'm doing here way easier. And it just makes it that much more memorable. So thank you to Ricky for that. And of course, if you're a fan of Lynyrd Skynyrd or Blackfoot or Ricky, and that's why you're here for the first time, I also thank you for checking out this podcast. And you've got, as you can tell there on the title of this, you've got 393 episodes before this you could check out. Not just those Damon Johnson episodes. There's been all kinds of people on here, including legendary artists like Glenn Hughes, Gene Simmons, Dee Snider, and a host of others. So we'll talk more about that after the interview as well. But with all that being said, let's not waste any more time and let's just jump into this and hear what Ricky Medlock has to say. Here is Ricky Medlock of Blackfoot and Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yesterday, and we did 3 shows out This past weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then the weekend before. We just started the new tour. Skinner did, and it's going well. It's going real well.
Is that how you guys do it now? Mainly is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, like weekend shows?
Well, unless there's some kind of special event, you know. But normally your Thursday, Friday, Saturdays is usually your best, you know, your best turnouts, you know, with audiences, you know, because, right, you know, people's got to get up and got to go to work, you know, on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays. I don't think they feel like, you know, going out and staying late, you know. So, you know, I got home yesterday, put on my Florida flag hat. I'm back in Florida now and going to try to do a little bit of relaxing and maybe go fishing for a day and, you know, just recharge, I guess, as they say, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where are you calling from?
I'm near Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yep. I'm very familiar with Oklahoma. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Last time I saw you was out at Born and Raised when you guys played that the year before last.
Oh, yeah.
Music festival outside of, like, about an hour outside of Tulsa. Yeah.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, speaking of, you know, you said being on the road, never run out of road, as a song you released a couple months ago. What's the response been like so far from fans?
You know what? It's been very, very positive. You know, I really, really wanted to figure out here in the last several years how to talk about and get it out, you know, among, I guess, the masses, which I haven't nowhere near covered yet, but hope to. I really have been into this whole, you know, MMIW thing. I think it's something that really needs to be talked about, should be talked about, and has not been talked about by, of course, the mainstream media. They never, you know, they never mention it whatsoever. There's a few little things maybe once in a while that you might catch on, you know, the news shows or whatever. But really to bring it to the forefront and really to have it be out there like a lot, pardon me, nobody ever does. And so when I got the opportunity through this record label, Rock the Cause, when I got this opportunity, I jumped at it. Going back to tell you that my friend Mark Warple, that's involved with me in this record, he and I had been wanting to kind of work together again because we had worked together for many years in the latter days of Blackfoot. And so what happened was, was kind of cool. I got a hold of him. And when Skinner takes breaks from the road of touring, I love to stay busy. I really do. I'm a player. I love to play. I love to stay busy in music, doing whatever. So I had this thing in my head. I knew that Mark had a band. And he's up in the Minnesota area, Minnesota, Wisconsin area. And I called him up one day and I said, hey, I have this idea. I said, what if I inserted myself into your band and we work up a whole Ricky Medlock show and go out, maybe try and play a few dates every now and then, you know, so that I can stay busy and, you know, wreak havoc on whatever. And he said, let me go to the band and I'll talk to the band about it and see what they think. Well, he did. And he came back and said, the band thinks that it's a great idea. So we knew if we did that, we had to, if we were going to go out and play, we knew we had to have something to promote instead of just, you know, going out and just playing, you know. So he came down here to my home here in Florida. I have a mix room slash studio in one part of my house. And he came down and I played him a lot of music that I had written or co-written or, you know, collected over many years. And one song popped out in particular, which is this song, Never Run Out of Road. Well, the song had been written about, maybe half a dozen years before that, by Charlie Starr and I, Charlie Starr of Blackberry Smoke. And Charlie and I are really good friends and, in fact, have written other songs on their last record, not this new one, but the one before. He and I wrote a song called Old Scarecrow together. Well, he had done a song between a writer friend of mine, Gordon Kennedy, and myself back on their first record called Bottom of This. So mine and Charlie's relationship, plus Blackberry would go out and open for Skinner every once in a while and, you know, tour with us. So it was, the relationship was a good camaraderie. Anyway, I played this song for Mark. And Mark says, wow, we could work on this now and get this started, you know? I said, great. So Mark went back to Minnesota. And I went up to Minnesota and started putting this side band together, the Ricky Bedlock Band, plus recording. Well, in the midst of it all, here comes a guy, into Mark. Mark and them touch base together, got a hold of each other. His name is Scott. And Scott is the head of, Scott Harold, is the head of Rock the Cause Records. And Rock the Cause, Scott said to me, and of course Mark, but said that when I sign artists and I do a record on them, I like for them to donate to their charity of choice, because that's what we got, Rock the Cause, you know? And it hit me right then. I said, whoa, I could do this and use one of the charities for the MMIW, the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Movement. Well, at that moment, when I knew we were going to do that, I called my really good friend. He's like a brother to me. His name is Gil Birmingham, and he's one of the actors. He's a great, renowned actor. He's been in a lot of stuff. The first thing that he was really renowned for was the Twilight series about the vampires and the wolves. He was the wolves' dad, okay, in the wheelchair, you know. But I mean, he's done countless films, and you know, and one of the films that he did touched on a father and a mother having their child on the reservation, their teenage daughter, disappear. And the movie is called Wind River, had Jeremy Renner in it. And it hadn't been that long ago, maybe 7-8 years ago, that movie was out. A very gripping film. And so I called up, you know, he's in the midst of doing Yellowstone. He's the tribal chairman on Yellowstone now. And I called him up and they did an episode, a particular episode in the third season, I think, that dealt with the son of the rancher of Yellowstone, his wife, native on the show. She was kidnapped and it was all set up. It was a set up plan with Gil Birmingham and his partner, Mo. They took the girl, this perpetrator, he kidnaps her, he takes her out of the reservation and he's going to have his way with her. And subsequently they do away with the guy, and come to find out as they're looking at the guy laying there and she's freaked out, crying, Mo is walking around out on the outer parts on the hillside there, and starts finding all these grave sites. And they touched on this, how easy it is on the reservations, as big as they are, of women to disappear, and they just never find them. So Gil calls up Taylor Sheridan. Taylor Sheridan says, I got a charitable fund that I donate to, and let him know this. And so Gil calls me back, said, Ricky, the one that Taylor donates to is the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. And if you want to know more about it, that's where to find it. You can type in, you know, that particular thing on your search, and it'll bring up the website. And that's one of the charities that's the biggest one of them that I donate to, plus the Dreamcatchers Charitable Fund, and also the National Save the Wolves Foundation. And I'm big into animals. You know, I'm not really a hunter. I'm a fisherman, so I guess I hunt fish, I guess. But I'm not really a hunter as such. So, to me, animals are a big part of my makeup. You know, I just love animals. You know, I donate to different animal charities and all that kind of stuff, especially for like elephants and tigers and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? But anyway, I've gotten a lot of great feedback on this from natives, a lot of great feedback. And I just want to continue this. We plan on doing another record and another song, and I will continue to donate to this worthy cause.
Obviously, you know, the MMIW would be something that, you know, you would recognize because of your, you know, native heritage. But right. Was there any reason that like pushed you into it? Do you have any personal connection to, you know, any woman that went missing, or like, what was it that initially pulled you into it? Was it just the fact that you have the platform to be able to help spread the word a bit?
I'll tell you what really pulled me into it was the fact that I'd spent time there in Oklahoma, down in Lawton on the Comanche, the Kiowa Comanche Reservation there. And I'd started hearing about these problems many years ago. And then I got to reading statistics. And I got to reading how for decades after decades after decades, these problems were existing. But the investigative part of it was almost non-existent, because from my understanding, and this is true, if a crime has happened on a reservation of such, they can't themselves investigate it. They have to call in the federal government. And it just gets lost. And, you know, in the shuffle.
Right.
And I hate to say this. Well, I don't hate to say it. I mean, I say it because sometimes I really think this. Sometimes I think that, you know, your reservations are, you know, sovereign territory, sovereign nations. And sometimes it's almost like natives are not counted as citizens of the country. It's like we got all these people here are citizens, but over here we got natives, you know. And you got to understand, you know, natives for many, many years have been under the scrutiny, you know, and of many, many people in government. Like, I still don't understand why the Bureau of Indian Affairs even still exists. I don't. Okay. You know, on one side, I understand it, because natives, you know, all of a sudden are able to own, certain native tribes are able to own, you know, the casinos and the, you know, the things like that. Hey, you know, if you can, all of a sudden it kind of betters the tribal, you know, the tribal people that live on those reservations. In some way it does, and maybe some ways it doesn't. You know, there's always good and bad about everything. There's two sides of the coin.
Right.
So all I know is that I have another really good friend of mine. He's another actor, and he lives on the Blackfoot Indian Reservation. He's from there in Montana. And he's trying to bring awareness and stuff of natives keeping their language, their own language, you know, not adhering to, you know, having to speak the English language all the time among themselves, but making sure that the young ones know their language and honor it. You know, it's a big honor thing. And his name is Eugene Brave Rock. And Eugene has been in quite a few shows and stuff like that. But Eugene is really intent on, you know, especially at the Blackfoot Indian Reservation, of making sure that the children are taught their language and the natives are hold on to it. It's a great honor to them. And it's their heritage. You know what I mean? I'm so into, you know, I guess I don't really want to say the underdog. I'm always pulling for the underdog, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that natives are an underdog, by no means. They're a proud people. And I've never professed to be a full native, because I'm not. But I am enough native, two-thirds, almost three-quarters, of where I've got that pride within me. And I'm proud of, you know, where my father, you know, came from, and my mother's origin, and all that stuff, you know. And I pulled toward that, and I'm proud of it. I mean, I played in a band called Blackfoot. And how much more could you be proud of a heritage than to call your band Blackfoot?
Right.
You know, two other natives in there, which was Jackson Spires and Greg Walker. I mean, and we carried that banner real proud. You know, we were very, very proud of it. You know, I was proud of, hey, you know, Redbone had big hits back in the late 60s, 70s, you know. I was proud to see a Native American band doing well. I got honored back 2008. I was inducted into the Native American Music Hall of Fame. And that was a huge thing for me. And it all happened. This is really interesting. It all happened because of Robbie Robertson. He was the one that brought it to the attention of the Native American Music Hall of Fame, a great lady there, Ellen Bellows. And I got the call that I was being inducted into it. And I remember getting on the platform and having my statue. And I was like, you know what? And it was in front of like a massive amount of natives and other people and stuff. I said, you know what? This is just as good, if not better, than being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, which I got shunned.
Right.
Being inducted into when Skynyrd went into it. And that's another story, you know. Right. But
we could rant about that for hours.
Oh, you and I could go on about that forever right now. But you know what? The never run out of road thing. Natives have never run out of road, whether it be the roads leading through this country or the red road. And I call it the red road. And natives are going to be here. They're not going anywhere. They've been around forever. They're the first Americans in my book. And I had a great saying for you. You know, my grandfather, He said, we invited everybody over for dinner and they never left.
Right. You know, you mentioned, you know, working with Mark and Charlie separately for this song. And then you also mentioned, you know, possibly doing more music. Would the new music be something new you wrote specifically with Mark, or is you, well, you might pull one of those older songs that you had written with Charlie already to work on, or do you have an idea on that yet?
You know what? We already have an idea. As a matter of fact, we got a couple. And as soon as I get, it's going to be an ongoing process. When Skynyrd, you know, takes time off the road, you know, the guys, I understand it too, the guys, they have, you know, large families, you know, and they need that time. They need that time to, you know, to be with their loved ones. I'm fortunate that my better half is on the road with Skynyrd. She's one of the backing vocalists.
Yeah.
And she was, oh my gosh, she's been with everybody. She has sang with the world's biggest artist, everywhere from Keith Richards, Ron Wood to, you know, she was with Kid Rock for 16 years as one of his backing vocalists. And now she's with Lynyrd Skynyrd. She was with Joe Walsh for four tours, you know, with the James Gang and all that, you know. And I'm very proud. I've got a daughter, one daughter, and she's 32 years old. And she's doing so well in business and all that stuff. So I guess I've done great in my life, you know, with what I've got. And I continue to forge ahead and write songs. I'm really into getting new music out that make a difference. Let's put it that way. And there is new songs. As a matter of fact, Mark and I have got two songs in particular that we're working on already. And one of them in particular is definitely aimed at the MMIW. I mean, by the lyrics, you'll be able to associate the lyrics with, you know, the movement. And we're going to continue to do so.
Is that the idea, kind of to do what you did with this one, release them every once in a while as a single, you're not heading towards like a full album or anything, are you?
No, I don't. I think that in today's world of music, I think it's better, honestly, I think it's better to release a single every 2 or 3 months. Because let's face it, you put a full album out and really, you put it on all the platforms to be able to stream and be able to listen to and, you know, download or whatever. Normally, people are only going to download maybe 2 or 3 songs. That's it. Well, if you do a single, in my opinion, if you do a song every 2 or 3 months and you build it up, then all of a sudden you can put it all together as a collection and release that. You know what I mean? So for right now, we intend on releasing a single at a time. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, the recent shows you did, you know, with Mark, with the Ricky Medlock band, like, yeah. What were the live shows? Were they mostly Blackfoot songs, or what did you incorporate into the live set?
We did Blackfoot. We did a couple of Skynyrd stuff. And what I wanted to do was kind of take you on a walk of my preferences of songs that the artist that wrote them and played them was big influences on my life. Like Paul Rodgers of Free and Bad Company, Eric Clapton, you know, Jeff Beck. All these great artists that I used to listen to, we ended up in the show doing songs by them, and it went down killer. You know, even Humble Pie. You know, I was a big Humble Pie fan. Well, my better half, Stacy, she came out on the stage and sang 30 Days in the Hole. Oh, and wow. It was great. Yeah, it was great. So it's kind of a, like a walk through, I guess a walk through my history of what I loved. You know what I mean? Certain Blackfoot songs, certain Skinner songs, and certain songs of you know, people that influenced me.
Obviously, you're not out there doing a full-on Blackfoot set, but do you feel like you out there performing live, performing Blackfoot songs takes anything away from the current lineup of Blackfoot, since you're kind of the, you know, the face of what most people think of when they think of Blackfoot and the voice and everything?
Well, I don't think it takes away from, you know, if I went out there and I did a full Blackfoot set, I feel like I'm almost cheating myself and not being true to what I am, because Blackfoot wasn't the only thing that I was,
right?
That I have been. Lynyrd Skynyrd has been, my gosh, the biggest proportion of my life. 2.5 years in the very beginning in the early 70s, and now 28 years back with him. Wow. You know, almost 30 years of my life. So 16 years only with Blackfoot. And there's my life right there. You know, that's a lot. That's a large portion of my life. But you know what? It's been in music. I love the art of music. I love the art of creating music. I love the art of recording, the live playing. Listen, I just said this to my manager a couple of days ago. You know, when you're standing on that stage, like I do nowadays with Lynyrd Skynyrd, and you look up at an arena full of people, and they're loving the songs, and they're, you know, they love your deliverance of the tunes and everything about it, you know. Other than with my loved ones, that's the happiest I'm ever in my life, is when I'm standing on that stage and I'm holding a guitar and I'm playing it, because that's what I was meant to do. There was never any questions when I was a young boy growing up with my grandparents, and my grandparents letting me do what I do naturally. They knew what I was going to do. I started playing banjo because of my grandfather at the ripe young age of 3 years old.
Wow.
I've got pictures of it. They knew what I was going to do. And you know what? They were my biggest inspiration. My grandfather was, and my grandparents is the one that adopted me and raised me. And that was on my mother's side of the family. And they allowed me to explore something that came very natural to me. And there was no, for me, there was no question I wasn't going to be I wasn't going to go to school and be a doctor or a lawyer, you know? I mean, that was probably the furthest thing from their mind too. But you know what? I've had a great life. I've had an incredible life, you know? And of course, I hope it doesn't end anytime soon. We all do. But, you know, one day when I have to get off the bus, you know, and cross over to the other side, I hope people will remember that I tried to do the best that I could, you know, and brought them a lot of fun and a lot of great memories. And I don't know. I guess I'd like to be remembered that way, I reckon, you know.
Right. I mean, what you said just kind of played into something I read on your Wikipedia page. Who knows if that's, you know, it's Wikipedia. It doesn't mean it's true, but it mentioned that in the 90s between Blackfoot and Skynyrd, that you had considered pursuing other careers. Is that real? Or like, is that something like, was it in music, or what were you thinking about?
Well, here's what happened. I guess it got to the point after the fall of of really the fame of Blackfoot had come down. And I was back, you know, playing juke joints, clubs, you know, all these places that, you know, I played before we had our fame. I was back doing that and was doing quite well at it, as a matter of fact. Playing about 100, 140, 150 shows a year. I got to a point, I'd put out two independent records. They didn't do anything. And I really got to a point to where I'd considered really doing something else. I have been doing radio morning shows at, I would hire myself out to take the place of morning show teams that would go on vacation.
Okay.
And I got a really good offer. I'd done about, oh my God, I was like doing about a dozen stations per year. And I got a really lucrative offer in Colorado Springs from a station there. And I really thought about it. I mean, I said, you know, what do I really want to do here? And I really toiled it over, and something kept me in the game. And it wasn't until, honestly, it wasn't until my ma passed away. She said to me, you know, when I leave, everything's going to be okay for you. And I never quite got that until I got the call from Ronnie Van Zandt's widow, Judy Van Zandt, and had invited me to Freebird, the movie premiere in Atlanta. And the night before was an all-star jam. And I said, I'll come. So I canceled shows with Foot and made my way to Atlanta. And there was an all-star jam the night before the world premiere. And Gary and the guys, we got to see each other again. It was like an old home, you know, old homecoming or something. And I was able to go out on stage, jam with the guys, and I went out on the stage right by myself with an acoustic guitar and sang Highway Song. And this was in Atlanta, and got a huge ovation for it, you know. And I did not know that Gary, God bless him, man, had been talking about putting me back in the band for several years, but the timing wasn't right. Well, their manager told my manager, hey, we need to put this guy back in the band. And my manager said, hey, call us, you know. Well, that was in the end of December of 95. And the months kind of rolled by and I hadn't heard from anybody or anything like that. So one day we owned a studio over here in Fort Myers. A cutting room over there, a production room. And I went to check my messages. And the message was, it was on one of those old recorders, you know, tape recorders, you know, that you had.
Yeah.
And the message said, hey, Brother Ricky, this is Gary. I want you to learn, I Ain't the One, Saturday Night, That Smell, and Freebird, the way Alan played it. And I'm going to come down and I'm going to audition you. And if you pass the audition, I'll give you $1.50 and a Snickers bar. and I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard, you know? Well, he came down here in Fort Myers. He came to my place, not this place, but another place I had. And I played halfway through I Ain't the One along with a CD. I played along with it. And he reached over and cut it off. He said, you want to do this? I said, hell yeah, I want to do this. And it just, all of a sudden, after I got back into the band, it hit me, you know, what my mom was actually saying, you know, yeah. And call it spiritual, call it whatever you want to call it. And not too many years ago, this is great. Not too many years ago, we finished a show. We climbed up on the bus. I rode the bus with Gary and his wife, Dale, and Johnny. And we climbed up on the bus, and I looked up on the kitchen counter thing there in the galley, and wrapped up was a Snickers bar with $1.50 in it, and a note from Gary that says, "Paid in full." I thought, I kept that thing wrapped up for a while with the note. I got the note here at my home somewhere.
Nice.
But it was so, so very cool. And you know what? I've spent all this time with Lynyrd Skynyrd, and you know what? I promised Gary that I would be here till the last note in Freebird was played. I had hoped that he would be here too, you know, but we lost him a year ago, and it really hit me so hard. I've had a tough time. It's weird. I've had a really tough time dealing with it, like I did with when my parents passed away. And it's only until recently now, we do a big tribute to Gary during Tuesday's Gone up on the video wall. And I've just now gotten to the point that I can look at it. I mean, I just, it's been a raw spot in my heart for the longest time. And I still miss him being on stage with me. I see your Brother Kane thing right there. We got Damon Johnson and I had been friends, my God, since the early 90s. Brother Kane, you should get Damon to tell you the story.
Oh, he has?
Yeah. And that's when we became friends, when he opened for Blackfoot back then. And when Gary was getting to the point that he couldn't go on the road and play, Johnny called me and said, "Do you know somebody that can, you know, play those parts like Gary? Identical." And I said, "You know what? I only know one guy." I said, "He did it with Thin Lizzy. He did it with Alice Cooper. He is one of the best." I said, "Damon Johnson." He goes, "Oh my God, why didn't I think of Damon?" I went, "That's what you got me for." You know? And I called Damon. Damon was just taken aback by it. He couldn't believe that, you know, I was calling him and saying, "Hey, dude, we need you out here," you know? Well, Gary gave his blessings, and Damon went out with us that first year and just, wow, did incredible. Was with us last year, and now he's with us this year.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's one of my dearest friends, and like a younger brother to me, you know? And he and I do really well on stage together, incredible together. And we're very honored and happy to have him aboard. We really are.
Well, you mentioned you knew that he could play these songs and that the band, you know, was in his blood as far as being a lifelong fan. But like, what do you think he's brought to the live stage? Because, I mean, obviously he's filling shoes that can't really be filled. But like, how do you think, you said you guys play well together, but like, how do you think the whole process has played out?
I think he brings an honesty to the songs. I think he brings very close to the originality of the tunes. And he brings an added energy into the band as well. And I'm telling you, the guy, he's so soulful and so good. And I couldn't be more proud. Neither can the band. we couldn't be more proud than to have him with us and have him doing this. He really stepped into he stepped into some difficult shoes, which is with no doubt, because stepping out on that stage in Gary's spot, whoa, that's I felt it just like I did the first time I stepped out there in Alan's spot.
Yeah.
You know, it's heavy. But if you're honest about the songs and keep their integrity and the way they were played, you'll have no problems. And of course, there were some people, of course, you know, looking at him like, you know, and we were all of a sudden again getting called a freaking cover band, you know, tribute band. Well, hold on. No. We honor the songs, but there's a lot of Lynyrd Skynyrd tribute bands out here running around, but we're not. Okay. You've got me, who was with the original band in the beginning, back when, before Leon and Artemis and, you know, Steve Gaines and Ed King. It was the three guys, Ronnie, Gary Allen, me, and Larry Junstrom, who went on to play with 38 Special. So Johnny is the youngest brother of the original singer, who, by the way, Ronnie had supposedly had said years ago that at some point he was going to let Johnny step in and sing for the band so that he could manage, write, and produce for the group. It never happened, of course, but Johnny and I are still there. We're laying honor to this brand name, and nobody in the band, Gary said this. Gary said, nobody in Lynyrd Skynyrd is bigger than the brand name itself.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, hey, like I said, I'll be there till the last note in Freebird is played, you know?
Yeah. Well, you touched on, you know, Gary and like the emotional aspect of, you know, losing your friend and your band member. But as far as the live show, what we just talked about with Damon, you know, taking nothing away from Damon, because obviously, like I said, I'm a big fan, but like, what do you miss most about having Gary on that stage next to you? Like, what that he brought to the crowd other than just being that legendary figure?
Well, I mean, Gary brought a certain element, a big element, into the whole fold of it, of the way he played those original songs, the feel of it, the vibe of it. I mean, here's the guy standing there that wrote most of all that original stuff. And the thing that I miss the most, I'd known Gary since we were teenagers. So you're going to miss a brotherhood like that. You just are. There's no way to get around. And yeah, I miss that. I look up every once in a while and say, wow, I miss seeing him standing there. He had a coolness about him that was unmatched. And I don't know. I suppose that at some point one day when I do get off the bus, I hope he's standing there and shake my hand and say, you know what, job well done, Ricky. You know, so.
Well, you mentioned, you know, playing that last note of Freebird. Like if, you know, say Skynyrd was to officially hang it up 2 or 3 years from now, like do you have a vision of what you might do going forward? Would it be more of what you've been doing with Ricky Medlock Band, or is that something you haven't considered yet?
I mean, I'll continue to play. I'm never going to stop playing. I'll tell you, I'll leave you with this too.
Okay.
Merle Haggard was interviewed, not when he was alive, by a young lady, and she goes, Mr. Haggard, you really don't, at your age, you don't need to be out here, and I'm sure that you've got enough money that you don't really need to come out here. It's not for the money. Why don't you just retire? He goes, young lady, because this is what I do. I play music. Well, to everybody, this is what I do. I play music. And one day, who knows when it'll be? One day when the Skinner train pulls into the depot and we all get off, I'll continue to play music. And I'll continue to record and write music. That's what I want to do. That's just me, you know? And if the good Lord's willing, to go out of here like that, hey, I'm good with it. I really am.
Right on. Absolutely appreciate you taking the time with me. It's been an honor talking to you and, look forward to seeing you live again.
I appreciate you having me on your show. Thank you very much.
There you go, Ricky Medlock of the Ricky Medlock Band, Blackfoot and Lynyrd Skynyrd. A massive thank you to Jody Best of Best Bet Promotions for her continued support of this podcast throughout the years. Huge love and respect for Jody Best. And of course, a massive thank you to Ricky Medlock for taking some time out there of his day to sit down on Zoom and talk to me about, as you could tell there, all kinds of different things throughout the years from Blackfoot and Skynyrd. And what he's got going on now, which is, as we talked about, that brand new single, Never Run Out of Road, which is fantastic. If you have not heard it yet, do yourself a favor and hear it as soon as you stop listening to this here in a few minutes. You won't regret it. All right, if this is your first time listening, like I mentioned up front, and like we talked about there in that episode, Damon Johnson has now been in Lynyrd Skynyrd for a couple years. And he's made his way onto this podcast 6 times now. That goes back to when he was in Black Star Riders. He joined Jason and I, both him and Ricky Warwick did, one time in person when Black Star Riders came through town opening up for Judas Priest. And since then, he's been on here multiple times on Zoom and on the phone. Most recently in 2022, and like I said, we talked about the reformation of Brother Kane, and we talked about, his entrance into the world of Lynyrd Skynyrd, thanks to Ricky Medlock. All that great stuff can be heard on all those episodes, and another one of the episodes that he was on was an episode that we did in tribute to Eddie Van Halen after he passed away. The episode is, I think, about 3.5 hours long. It's one of my favorite ones ever. It might be the one I'm most proud of that Jason and I ever did or that I've ever done since. We had 14 different guests on it, all talking about the love and respect for Eddie Van Halen. And Damon Johnson was one of the people that joined Jason and I to talk about, why he loved Eddie and Van Halen so much. So that's a real cool one to check out. But also, Glenn Hughes has been on here twice. Frank Kanan of Tesla has been on here 4 times. Brian Weed of Tesla, D. Snyder of Twisted Sister, Jeff Tate, formerly of Queensryche. We've had members of Shinedown, Three Doors Down. Speaking of Shinedown, of course, one of their early hits was a cover of Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Look at how we're tying that together. Something else we can't really tie together is Vanilla Ice was on here at one point. Shooter Jennings has been on here, and while he's country, I would think that people that love Southern Rock would dig some Shooter Jennings, so if you've never checked him out, definitely delve into some of his stuff. It's not typical. It's fantastic. We've also had on, members of bands as heavy as the Black Dahlia Murder, thrash bands like Megadeth, Testament, Battlecross, Overkill, Toxic Holocaust. The list is great and long there. Members of Whitesnake, Winger, Warrant, Slaughter, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses. The list is great and long. TheThunderUnderground.com. You can listen to everything right there. You can also listen wherever you listen to podcasts, pretty much. So wherever you're listening right now, whether it be Spotify, SoundCloud, MixCloud, or any random podcast app, click like, follow, or subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And speaking of future episodes, coming up very shortly next week, we've got a run of about 4 more episodes. I can already tell you what they're going to be. We've got 2 of the members of In Theory, Mike Mostert and Tony Covino, are returning to the podcast. They've been on here multiple times. Always a great talk with those guys. Pete Summit, the vocalist of Crashing Wayward, a great, fantastic new band out of Las Vegas. He's been on here multiple times. He'll be back. Kevin Codford, the keyboardist and producer of Myrith, will be on here very soon for the first time. And another first-timer is Keith Wallen, the guitarist of Breaking Benjamin. All these episodes are coming up here in the month of April. Looking forward to get them out to you. So follow us on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, on all of them. If you're looking for us, just Google Thunder Underground, and after you see the Ozzy Osbourne song from Osmosis, scroll down and we should be the second or third option there. So you can find out whatever you need to find out. All right, I'm going to quit rambling here and jump off, but until next week, once again, a huge thank you to DEB Concerts, Sunset Tattoo, Best Bet Promotions, and Ricky Medlock. And until next time.
Thunder Underground, y'all.